Hi, welcome to the Audio Engineers Podcast number 19 with me, Streaky, and
me, Shay.
Today we're going to be discussing creativity. So I'm guessing from the chat we've just had before we came on air, so to speak, that we're talking about how if you need to be creative in mastering, or if you're creative in mixing or recording, how creative are you as an engineer compared to how much do you need to be? So I'll kick this one off this week.
Go for it.
Because I like the sound of my own voice.
Sweet.
Mastering. Now, for me, I used to write music because I used to find mastering wasn't creative enough for me. So, but this is going back to the mid-90s. And in the mid-90s, you were not expected to do as much as you would be today. I think this is where mastering has gone wrong over the last 20 years, because people rely on the mastering engineer more, and the mix engineer to a degree more, because they're doing stuff in home studios, things like that. Whereas before, there was no home studios. It was all done in, you know, proper studios with trained engineers, and it was all done to a certain spec. And so, for example, what I would do as a mastering engineer, I would be just making sure that I'd be sort of rebalancing the EQ maybe, but just adding a few touches of top or bottom, nothing too major on an EQ. And then I'd be adding 1 dB of limiting. And that was just for the machines, so that if it had any overs, it would just clean off the peaks nicely, like a clipper would do. And it would just, you know, it just wouldn't clip, because we had to put them down onto sort of big tapes, and these tapes would show errors if you had any overs and then get rejected by the factory. So the only reason you were putting a limiter on it was for the process of it not being rejected from the factory and coming back to the studio. It wasn't, you weren't putting a limiter on to get major level. You were pushing level into the equipment, but not to the extent you're doing today. So for me, that was not creative enough. So I then used to write music on the side and do things like that, just so that I could get my, you know, because I'm a creative person. So that used to sort of give me my creativity. Now the problem is, now what's happened is with mastering is people are giving you stuff, and if you haven't put loads into it, if you haven't smashed it to death, put compressors across it for sound, or changed the EQ and stuff like that, a lot of people will send it back like, oh, you haven't put your thing on it. And it's like, well, really, you don't want my thing on it.
Yeah.
Because the whole point of mastering is you're just finishing it off. You're getting it to a level that's acceptable by the marketplace, and you're either rebalancing it, like by putting a bit of top on, as I've just explained. That's the way that I used to do it in the early 90s is the way it should be done.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, so I have found it more creative in the last, say, 10 or 15 years, but not for the right reasons. You know, you're being creative as in you're pushing more low end in, or you're getting something to, you know, hit, because it's not been done that way in the first place, and it should have been. So yeah. It's that you're putting massive corrections into stuff that you never needed to do before, and you have to do a lot more of that now.
So, yeah, I think it comes from the whole, like, from the past sort of 10 or so years, the fix-it mentality.
Yeah.
It can be fixed mentality. Rather than doing it yourself, it'll get fix it in mastering, fix it in mixing.
Yeah,
I'll fix it in the mix.
It's the tail wagging the dog, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's the I can fix it after rather than fixing it now.
Yeah.
And I can, you know, instead of people thinking, okay, well, let's get a really good vocal recording. Let's take our time over getting that. Let's record everything lovely. Let's get all the right stuff, you know, the right EQ done. Let's pay some money and go into a nice studio, blah, 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 all the way along the chain. And then there's not as much processing. It all sounds nice and you have a lovely recording. It's kind of, people are going the other way, going, oh, well, we haven't got a nice studio because we'd rather not waste the money. So what we'll do, we'll just put some duvets up in your bedroom and we'll record the vocals in there. And then, oh, they'll be all right because the mix engineer's got this really good EQ that he's got.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
mix engineer's like, oh, well, I couldn't afford that EQ, or I couldn't be bothered to download it, so I'm just going to use this one. It's all right, it'll do the job.
Yeah.
And so all the way along, you're kind of compromising, and you're not doing it to the best of your ability. And you really, it doesn't, you don't have to have a lot of money to do it to your best of your ability, no. But it's just a fact of making the effort and doing that, and not thinking, oh, it'll be all right, which is what you're saying, really, isn't it?
It's well, like, yeah, it's like you're then forced to be creative with it. Like, I mean, there's two ways to think about it. One is the fix-it mentality, where you're sort of forced to be creative because you're making adjustments and correcting errors. But the other one is, nowadays, because there's so many more people that have the ability to master records or to mix records, because you don't have to have a multi-million pound studio with a massive SSL desk, you can do it all off a laptop. It's saturated with people that want to mix your tracks and want to master your tracks. So you have to have something that to make you above the rest. You need to sort of stand out from the rest. So you need a particular sound, which means, obviously, by default, you need to then have some sort of creativity, some sort of workflow, or some sort of sound of your own, which is then why people, certain labels, certain artists, flock towards certain studios or certain engineers, because of the sound that they have, because of the creativity that they put into their music. Which, like we were talking about before, like you said years ago, you didn't have mix engineers, you had balance engineers, and it was all in the production. So the production was the creative side of it. Then someone came in and balanced it, and it was utility, balancing the mix. There was no real creativity involved in it. He was working with what he was given. And then it went on to mastering, so then the mastering engineer would just level it, and that was his job. Whereas now, the production guy passes it over to the mix engineer, that's then sticking more plugins on it and giving it a bit more like room and width, and maybe an EQ here and some reverb there, and start sticking modulation plugins in things to thicken the mix out. It's creative. And then it goes to the mastering engineer, and he's got a nice mid-side EQ that he's using. Do you know what I mean? And it's like every step of the way now, you're kind of forced to be creative, to stand out from everyone else and have your own sound, which I don't think is a bad thing, because otherwise music wouldn't sound like it does today if it wasn't the case. Do you know what I mean? That's kind of how it helps genres become new things. Do you know what I mean? It helps evolve the sound of music.
I think I'm being a bit old fuddy-duddy by saying things should stay the way they were in the 1960s, 70s and 80s, and 90s, but I think that
it's because you were there then and did it like
too far.
Yeah, say if you were there in the 90s and like the early 2000s doing it, and you could see that it was working in a good way, and you've kind of watched the deterioration of, well, not deteriorating, but the amount of work you have to do as a in your job role, or what is expected of you now. Like, because I didn't see that. I started sort of mid-2000s. So I've always been around that. You have to be creative and you have to stand out, because so many more people can achieve what you're going to achieve with the same equipment.
I tend to agree, but also every top mastering engineer I've ever worked with they don't do too much to the sound. So
yeah,
they'll do what I just said, where they'll add a little bit of top and some limiting, but because they know that they don't want to over push things, and that's why the top producers are working with them. Mm. And because those top producers know the sound that they want,
yeah,
and they don't go to a mastering engineer for him to change it.
Yeah,
they've got the sound they want, but they just need to get it to a level that's acceptable by the marketplace without it changing.
Yeah.
So the skill as a mastering engineer ideally is to take the mix that someone's given you and enhance it to the point where maybe you just open it up a little bit to make it sound, you know, because it's, say you've put some top on it, or, you know, and you just put a limiter on it. But your job as a mastering engineer isn't to be overly creative and start smashing the hell out of it.
Yeah.
I think that's, I'm just saying the difference between somebody who's doing it in an amateur way and somebody who's professional, as in a recording engineer and stuff like that. It's a totally different world.
I think it does boil down to that. Yeah, it boils down to the fact that if you're top of the game, high end professional, you're not really going to do much, and you are only going to do what you're supposed to do. Whereas if you're still a professional, you're doing it as a profession, like by definition, it's your profession, it's what you do for a living, but you're still not at the top of your game, pretty much. You are going to try and have to keep your head above water and be like, hey, I'm here. This is what I sound like. This is what I can do for your music. Do you know what I mean? It's like there's what a lot of I'd say at least 50-60% of mix engineers and mastering engineers around, they have to kind of do this to be able to then get to the point where they don't really have to do anything anymore because they've got the background and they've got the like the what's the word?
Clientele.
Yeah, the clientele, but like the it's you're known for, I can't think of the word. Your reputation.
Reputation.
Yeah, like your reputation is he'll do a good job. Do you know what I mean? But in order to get that, he'll do a good job. You would have had to do a few probably rubbish ones, but some really good ones and some really good jobs. And in order to get those good jobs, you would have had to stick your head above a little bit, done a little bit something, done something a little bit out of the ordinary that was different to the next guy. I thought, oh, that sounds pretty good. Like, what's he done there? And that's from sparks from the creativity that you're going to bring to it. Like, it's a
Yeah.
level that you have to. It's a fine line. Like, you have to be creative nowadays, but the more creative you are, is the more you're going to hinder the original track. And the problem with it is you're expected to be more and more creative nowadays from the client. Like what can you do for, I'm giving you money. What can you do for me? Like, what is it that you're going to bring to the table? Like, I shouldn't have to do that.
Yeah, but then that's the mind. But then for me, that goes back to when we've talked about mindset again, and that's the mindset of an amateur is to go, I've paid you money, so what? So if you don't go mental on it and totally change the sound, so it's unrecognizable when I get it back, I don't feel I've had value for money. That's an amateur mindset which people need to try and eradicate from their head, because it's like you should be. You're paying a. I'm only talking as a mastering engineer, not a mix engineer, because I think mixing is different to mastering from that respect. But you're going there as a final check to check that the mix and the sound, because the mix you're going to work on, you could work on for months. Mastering you're going to do in an hour, right? So you're not there. You should have all those creativity, all that creativity should have been done by the time you get to the mastering room. When you get to the mastering room, you should be there just to get the levels up to market levels so that you're up to the same standard as everyone else. And to get them to that point, you're going to have to, you're compromising someone's mix these days, because as soon as you start putting 5 dB on top of somebody's mix that's already loud enough, right, you're going to start pushing into the limiters and you're going to start changing that mix. The drums are going to sound different, the vocals are going to sit differently. So however you've done that to get it up to the market acceptable levels, you're going to have to get creative with your EQ and you're going to have to get creative with your limiting to get it to sound the same as the mix that came in the room to get it up to the level that you would need to do. So really, that is the skill of the mastering engineer. You don't want to be changed. You're not adding creativity for the sake of adding creativity. You're adding it because it has to be done to keep the mix sounding the same as it did when it came into the room. So when I'm mastering, I'm always A-Bing between the input and output so that I can always hear how did the mix sound? Where am I taking it to? Now, the amount of times I've done that and you'll lose the crack on the snare, that's the main first place you'll notice it. So you'll listen to the after and you'll go, the snare is now buried in the mix. And now everyone knows the snare should be quite loud in the mix because that's keeping the groove going. So you're to try and keep that crack in it, you've got to EQ it or do some kind of gain structure within your mastering to keep that going. There's loads of times where I've done it and gone, oh God, and have to strip everything off again. I've got it. I think it sounds great on the output, but then I'm listening to the before, and I've lost all of the weight in the snare. I've lost the smack, and it just sounds like a different track. So that mix engineer is going to be really pissed if I've done that, because they've spent ages getting that snare sound. They've spent ages balancing it to get it so that everything's working in the right way. So that is the joy of a good mastering engineer when they hear that, appreciate that, and then all they're doing is trying to get that, but with 9 dB of gain added to it, which is very, very difficult to do.
I mean,
What
probably when you
do you
think
think?
about it, it's more like the type of creativity. So, like you're doing, it's more utility creativity that you're doing. Do you know what I mean? It's just like you're being creative in the fact that you know what it is that you're going to be, that what's going to be needed, and you know what you're going to use to get that. Rather than like you say with the snare, for instance, you'd still only use a little bit of EQ and some limiting. But over creativity, someone that's not on like a higher level would be thinking about, right, how do I get that snare out? Right, let's saturate the snare and then let's stick those. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then you're making mix tweaks. You're at a mastering stage, you're making mix tweaks. And it's even at the mix stage, it's like the hardest thing to do at mix. I mean, it's harder in mixing. The hardest thing to do at mix is to not be the producer of someone's track, because there's so much potential for you to add a little bit here and add a little bit there and a little bit more thickness to this. And it's like, in a way, that's your job to do that in the mix.
But yeah, but that's okay if you've had authority from the artist. So, for example, someone I know, and I know this for a fact, Spike Stent, who I've done stuff with, he's a big mix engineer. He will say the artist will trust him because they know, because of his record of number ones and stuff, they can trust what he said. So he'll say to them, okay, would you mind if I'm going to have to change the drums.
Yeah.
You're going to have to come in and redo the vocal.
Yeah.
And it becomes a kind of half production, half mix session, because he knows he can't get the sound that he wants in his head unless he changes all the drums and changes the vocal or whatever.
Yeah.
And he does that with a lot of artists, but they'll do that for him because they appreciate that he knows what he's doing. And that's kind of being creative. But again, like you say, you're pushing back into production rather than being a mix engineer there.
Yeah. Instead of just balancing the mix and making sure the stereo field is balanced right with frequencies and the width in terms of balance and level and stuff, you're then going into...
there's not too many reverbs going on and they're not clapping and you've got space in the mix.
Yeah.
And that's mixing, yeah.
But then nowadays, mixing is not just that. Mixing is adding extra effects into things. Do you know what I mean? And making it sound, oh, like doubling the vocal up. So, I mean, that's production. That's production.
That's
work.
Production.
But it's now it's kind of a lot of the time expected as a mix engineer. Could you thicken the vocal? Well, yeah, but surely that no. Do you know what I mean? Like I can
that's
do
production. Yeah,
but that's a production tech. That's a production technique. That's something. So am I going to get a producer credit for this? No.
Yeah.
Okay. So you do it. See what I'm saying? Like, but now you're expected. See, you wouldn't say you do it.
Yeah, because when you record it, well, record it into a decent mic and preamp, and then you will have that sound instantly.
Yeah.
You shouldn't be then trying to recreate that, going back to what we're saying and fixing it later.
Yeah.
You should be trying to then fix it later in the mix. And then somebody's asking you to put, this goes back to things I've said before about, for example, someone asking for reverb on a master.
Yeah,
it's like, what are you doing? It's like, not at that point.
Yeah.
You should have done that before.
Yeah.
Or, you know, can you change the guitars? I'd like them a little bit more metallic. Well, no, because what can happen is, then everything else in that frequency range at mastering is going to sound metallic. I think this is like more of an education thing and more of a professional and amateur situation rather than, you know, what people do want from creativity point of view. I think it's like unblurring the lines.
Yeah. Really. It's funny as well. Once you get the feedback from like the type of people, the type of clientele that there are. So like some people would say, can you do this? You say, well, no, that's sort of a different stage. That's like the production stage. I say, okay, fine, I'll sort it out. I'll send it back. Whereas someone else would go, why not? Like, oh, because that's your job to do. Oh, I thought you were a mix engineer. I am. That's what I'm doing. Like, I'm not the production. Well, if you're going to give me a production credit for it, sweet. Okay, perfect. Send it on.
Yeah, and what you're saying is it's very difficult, depending at what level you are, how much work you've got, how much you're charging for that work, means whether you're going to say yes or no and whether or not firstly, you've got to know yourself what the lines are and how far you should be taking things and how much you can pass on to a mix engineer and how much you can pass on to a, you know, because me as a doing the production or do it, you know, the recording and production probably happens at the same time a lot of the time. And you want to prep that. It'd be lovely if you knew you're going to a mix engineer and you could prep it already for the mix engineer so that he knows, oh, this is good. This all sounds right. This is ideal situation. But I think if somebody's doing cheap work or doing stuff at home, they're going to say yes to everything, including mastering. They're going to do the whole thing for someone.
Yeah.
Or no money whatsoever. And I think that's, you know, then the person at the end thinks, well, why don't I sound like Drake?
Yeah,
because you're not going to, because he has done what we're saying is the ideal scenario. He hasn't blurred the lines, he's gone into every scenario. You know, and I think that as a producer you should know, or as an artist you should know what how you're going to get a good sound is by using individuals that are specialised in their certain areas.
And it's hard to not come across as if you're being lazy or that you or can't be bothered. Yeah, or an arsehole, because you're not. It's just you're just like reiterating what your job role is like what you've decided to do for your career.
I'm not a professional at that, so I can't. Like, people ask me to mix stuff. Yeah, I could. Of course I could. You know, I've got Pro Tools. Give me the session. I'll mix it for you. But it's not worth it. I'd be there forever. It would sound crap. And then someone would go, oh, yeah, I wouldn't use him for mastering. Exactly. He would mix for me once. It's useless. It's
career like, over.
There's nothing to do with my, you know, to be fair, I'd probably get it 50% there. But I'd be more listening to it still as a mastering engineer. So it's a totally different ball game, really. I mean, creativity, leave it for everybody that's in the production place, I think, ultimately.
I think at levels of creativity,
production within your role.
Yeah, so exactly. So like at production stage, be as creative as you want. Creativity is production. The more creative you are, is the more innovative your productions will be. At mix stage, 50% productive, like creativity. You can be a bit creative with it, but stay within the realms of mixing. When you get to mastering, 10-15% creativity. The rest is utility. The mix should be good by then. You shouldn't be doing mix tweaks. You shouldn't have to go and think, oh right, I've got ten pieces of gear here. I'm gonna use every single one because I've got these bits
really,
of gear.
It should be work. You should be developing a relationship with a mastering engineer. As a mixer or a producer that's mixing, you should be developing a relationship with a mastering engineer so you can send him stuff that you're not having to pay for him to listen to and say, how's this sounding before I send it to you? And then they can have a listen to it, which takes 2 minutes, and go, well, when you're sending it over, send us a version with the bass down.
Send us a version
with the instrumentals and send me 2 stems, instrumental and vocal, and I'll be able to piece it together a bit better here because once I've compressed it a bit. It's building a relationship with a mastering engineer so that you know that your mixes and your production is getting that final set of ears that can give you a sign off and say, your job's done, I can take it from here kind of thing and get it to the level you want, because I think your mix is sounding spot on now.
Yeah.
I know, although it sounds dull to you as a mix engineer, it sounds dull. The balance is perfect. As soon as I put a bit of nice top on it and bring the level up, it will sound bang on.
Yeah, you can hear the potential of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know automatically, okay, well, the mix is all over the place.
Yeah.
You know, right, okay, you've got timing issues there.
Yeah.
You know, things like that. Sometimes there's even details like that that you're not hearing because you're thinking it's all right and you're kind of going with it. And then the mastering engineer gets it, who hears timing all day and goes, something really not right here. Yeah. And like, send it over. And it's like, well, you know, they haven't tuned the vocals correctly, or just one vocal's out and they've just missed it every time, you know. Just things like that. That's what you're looking for a mastering engineer. And that's not being creative. That is just being the final brush and polish.
Yeah, the police.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, the security.
And the same happens, I think, going back down the chain. A mix engineer needs to go back to a recording engineer and say, can you re-record these vocals? Because they're really shabby.
Yeah.
And if you can't, then can you get the vocalist in and I'll re-record them so that I can get them how I want them to sound.
Mm.
Otherwise, the mix engineer is then compromising his role in what he's doing, and people will go, oh, it sounded rubbish. But it's like, well, yeah, but did you see what I had to work with?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
It's shocking. They sent me 20 snares. They sent me, and then they didn't like the snare because it didn't sound like their really bad demo.
And then the problem with that is that once it's touched your hands, even though it wasn't your fault in the first place, it is now your fault.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's now your problem.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I think we've kind of covered off creativity. That's
it, pretty much.
Okay, well, thanks for listening. Please subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you listen to the podcast, or even on YouTube if you listen to it there. Please do us a favour. If you like this, please thumb it up and send it to a friend. If you can share it with a friend who's into it and help us to build our audience, then that helps us to carry on doing it, basically, because if no one's listening, we're not going to bother.
That's the point.
So it's handy if you do pass it on to friends who you know would be into it. So, but anyway, thanks for listening again. I hope we haven't bored you to death, but I hope you've got something out of it. Until next time, thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.